Welcome to the Golf Better Podcast. I'm your host, Derek Dominski. The Golf Better Podcast is brought to you by GolfBetterTucson.com. Be sure and check out the online learning portion of the site if you want to take your golf game to the next level. I hope everyone had a very Merry Christmas and holidays with friends and family. We've got a very special guest on today in part one of a two-part series, Boyd Summerhays. From a legendary golfing family, tour coach to Tony Finau, Wyndham Clark, and others, and father to U.S. Junior Amateur Champion Preston, up-and-comer Grace, and Cam, who looks like he's catching the fire. I've always heard Boyd is as nice as they come, and when we first shot the podcast, both of us were in slight remote locations as far as cell phone service was concerned. I've never met Boyd before, but he was overly friendly and accommodating as he made it no issues to drive to a place where he had cell phone service. Funny enough, we reshot the podcast anyways. Part one is going to be a little bit of background into Boyd, his teaching, his family, and history. And part two is going to deal more with his parent-coach relationship, advice to juniors, and advice to parents. Enjoy part one. All right, Boyd, welcome to the podcast.
Derek, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. Excited to talk to you.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your family's history in golf.
So I come from a golfing family. Many of you recognize the name first from probably my uncle Bruce Summerhays, my father's oldest brother. He played on the Champions Tour for about 15 years, won three times. My brother Daniel Summerhays, he's 4 years younger than me, played on the PGA Tour for 8 years. I played the PGA Tour briefly in my mid-20s. Bruce had a daughter, Carrie Summerhays Roberts, that played on the LPGA Tour. And he also has a son that played some events on the PGA Tour and Korn Ferry Tour. So at one time, cool time in Summerhays golf history, we had a player on the Champions Tour, on the PGA Tour, Korn Ferry Tour, and on the LPGA Tour. So needless to say, sometimes when our family got together for family reunions and get-togethers, it got pretty competitive and heated. So we had some fun growing up on the golf course.
So then how did you find yourself getting into teaching? I know you're a great player yourself, so go ahead and talk about your journey into teaching.
Yeah, you know, I never envisioned myself being a teacher or a coach. I grew up in a golfing family, like I said, and at a young age, I started to show some results, and I won Junior Worlds at age 10, won again when I was 14, and then at 16, I ended up going to Oklahoma State. My roommate was Charles Howell, and a few of my teammates played on the PGA Tour as well, Bo Van Pelt and Ed Lohr, and I got my PGA Tour card when I was 24, and I had all these dreams and visions of having a long and successful career, and that didn't end up happening. I played professionally for 12 years, but briefly only played on the PGA Tour. And I played over a course of 3 years on the PGA Tour through a medical extension, 29 events over 3 years. Lost my card, got back on the Korn Ferry Tour. But then through the next 6-7 years, never really gained that form again to make it back to the PGA Tour. And so when I was 32, Preston, my oldest son, now is 17, but he was 9, getting older. Grace was 7, Cam was 4, and my family was growing, getting older, and I just wasn't quite making the improvements I knew I needed to see to be able to justify getting back on the PGA Tour. And so I think anybody that has played professionally or had some success in their golf career, not achieving what you want to can be kind of a bitter thing to swallow. And I think it took me a little bit to get over the disappointment of not having the long and successful career I wanted on the PGA Tour. But I also realized that, I had some success in golf as a player. I did come from a golfing family. I'd been around it my whole life. I'd been around some great players my whole life and had some great experiences. And also that I could use in coaching, but also I made a lot of mistakes as a player that held me back from fulfilling my potential or full abilities for sure, but that also in time would help me be a really good coach or help the students I had. So I had no intentions of being a coach or a teacher. I really just was so set on being a player. And now looking back now, I think it's really cool. It's like, man, I kind of always, now I look at it and think, wow, you kind of were meant to be a coach. You didn't know it and you never thought that was going to happen, but a lot of experiences happened in my playing career that ended up, you know, helping me be a decent coach and be helpful to the students I teach.
So you've mentioned that you've made some mistakes in your playing career. What were some of those mistakes, and how, in making some of those mistakes, how does that help you maybe prevent some of your players from making the same mistakes that you've made in your career?
Well, I think people that follow me as a kid, you know, growing up and having some success as a junior golfer and an amateur and a young pro, you know, I think that, you know, myself included and the people around me, you know, saw maybe some great things happening. And that, you know, like you said, and I mentioned to you, hey, I made some mistakes. And I think, you know, one of them was once I got to the PGA Tour, I had some injuries. Okay. There's a lot of people on the PGA Tour that have injuries and they recover successfully and go on to have great success. I think what happened with me is that I started to question a little bit about some of the things I was doing in my swing, and I made a huge mistake. To get to the PGA Tour, I was pretty stubborn. I would get some lessons for a very specific reason, to learn a certain shot or to pinpoint a certain area of my game, and then I would just go do my thing and incorporate it in my own way and just kind of, I definitely didn't have rabbit ears. I was very focused. I was very stubborn, a little leery of listening to too many people. And I was starting to get some great results. And I think when I got on the tour, you're surrounded by so many great players. It's easy to, you know, start to see like, whoa, man, I played a practice round with Adam Scott. He doesn't miss. I got to do this better. I got to change this. I mean, I played with Retief Goosen in a practice round, Vijay Singh, all within the first 2 or 3 weeks of my rookie year. And then when some injuries came along, I think I'm very honest with my current students and say, hey, I wasn't not successful because of injuries. It was what followed after the injuries and all the mistakes I made. And what happened is I would go to a coach, and instead of me going to take the lesson and saying, you know what, I'm starting to, you know, my miss is a little bit too spinny and to the right, I would just go and just like let, you know, a coach tell me whatever they wanted to do, you know, with my swing. And I became obsessed with developing a perfect swing, or I bought into this idea that I could build something that would never miss a shot again, or, you know, and I think that was a huge mistake on my part, that, you know, I wasn't like that growing up. My father taught me and my brother, you know, how to compete, how to train, how to practice, you know, to work on technique, but not be obsessed with, you know, some things that were unique in our swings, right? And I think that I made a huge mistake in becoming a perfectionist, really. That wasn't my nature growing up and what got me, you know, the success to be able to pursue a career. You know, I was worried more about building skill sets and learning shots and being around great players that could maybe wear off on me. But for 2, 3, 4 years in my professional career, I must have gone to 10 to 15 coaches within that time frame. And you kind of know how that's going to go. I went to good coaches. They were good coaches for sure, knew what they were doing, but I never really gave, you know, them enough of a chance by always switching. So when I look back on my career, I look at it and say, okay, I don't want to be a perfectionist coach. I don't want to look at my student's swing and say, okay, wow, you do this wrong, you do this wrong, you do this wrong. Because that's how I started to look at my own swing. I'd be on a range and I'd sit there hour on end, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, filming every swing and nitpicking it nonstop, to where obviously I started to neglect my short game, my putting, course management. You know, I got so obsessed with building what I thought would be a swing that wouldn't hit bad shots again, that I honestly was kind of the beginning of the end of my career a little bit. And now as I teach players, when they come to me and I can tell they might be a little insecure about their swings, I try to have them focus on a few of the good things they do in their swings and to build around their swing a couple of things that they actually do well. And then obviously work on the one or two areas that are the biggest problems in their swing instead of, you know, it's sad, but I'm going to be honest and admit there were times where literally I'd have 5 to 8 swing thoughts. And then guess what? After practicing 8 hours that day, the next day, it seemed like I had another set of 5 to 8. And, you know, I think that when I was done playing, I was pretty aware that that was one huge error that I made as I became a perfectionist, became obsessed with filming my swing nonstop. And most of us, when we look at our swing anyway, I don't know if you're like this or not, but most of us don't like what we see when we look at our swings on film. And I was no different than the next guy. So I could go and play a tournament and hit it really nice and play good. And then I get the camera back out and I'd see something I didn't like, and that or that cycle went all over again. So I think by the time I was ready to coach, man, I had rid that out of me, my system, so much, because I knew that was a huge shortcoming in my career. But on the flip side, because I had gone to so many coaches and had kind of become obsessed with trying to, you know, build, you know, a swing that was good, you kind of learned a lot as well. But that didn't help me as a player, but it ended up helping me as a coach. So not only did I learn a lot from going to a lot of great coaches, but I also learned not to coach people in a perfectionist way is how I was trying to take the lesson. So that was definitely a lesson I learned. I mean, there was many more that I learned as well, but that one really sticks out at me that, you know, I do teach a lot of players that have very unique swings. Tony swings very different than Wyndham Clark or, you know, Scott Harrington, my brother. I've let them keep kind of the same similar look they have, and you take the best thing about their swing, you build around it, and you try to pick away at the one or two things that are causing the biggest problem and kind of work on those until they get fixed. So I don't think the golf swing's simple. I don't. I think it's really complicated and it's really intricate and it's fascinating, but I think that the best way to make improvement is to try to keep it simple and just step by step make improvement. And that was a huge error I made in my career, was just trying to revamp all the time. I was revamping that swing day after day after day to where pretty much I did lose a lot of the skills that I had, no doubt about it.
So who would be some of your major influences in your teaching, or how would you define your teaching style?
Well, I think, you know, that's a great question. When I got done playing, I had to sit down and be honest with myself and say, okay, for me to move on, you know, a lot of people that have played, I played for 12 years professionally. A lot of people, when they transition into coaching, they coach for a little bit, but then they kind of have that itch to go back and play, right? They just teach to make enough money to go back and try it again. And for me, it wasn't like that. I knew it was the end. You know, my kids were getting older. I wasn't making the progress. I needed to be honest with myself and say, okay, what went wrong? What did I do right? What did I do wrong? And move on from there. And I think my first goal was just to start to make a living for my family. So when you're saying what were the influences or what was my philosophy, one of the things I did know that hurt me as a player is that I had an open club face. My miss was to the right. I had a little bit of a cup left wrist coming down. My face was open, and I always fought missing it to the right. So I thought, you know, I knew that was a tough position to play from. So when you're saying what are some of my philosophies as a teacher, you look at my kids' swings, because when I coach players on the PGA Tour, meaning they had teachers along the way, or they did a lot of great work on their own before I ever met them, right? Mm-hmm. With my kids, I'm teaching them from the ground up, right? So they're going to get my heaviest influence and, you know, what I would like them to do from the very beginning. I remember I was on the road, you know, coaching on the PGA Tour, and I showed Preston the flop shot, and he had practiced it in our backyard and at the course, and I come home, and my goodness, he has this cup left wrist at the top and an open face, and I kind of like, oh my gosh, this is not good. And so immediately I'm like, okay, I showed him. Now he's pretty well known for, he has a flexed left wrist at the mm-hmm. top or bowed, and he has a lot of, you know, body rotation, and he has very little club face rotation. He has, you know, kind of a modern golf swing. Mm-hmm. I like that, you know, I think it's easier to play from a slightly shut face and then rotate. But Then once again, you got Henrik Stenson that doesn't play from a flexed left wrist, and I have players that don't play from there and that hit amazing shots. But I do believe that the club face is king. You got to learn how to control the club face, have it in the right position, and the body starts to react to that club face. So that was a cool thing about my playing career is I did know that at the end I was like, man, I fought an open club face like the average golfer does, right? And so it was pretty important to me with Preston, with Gray. She plays from the same kind of club face position, a little shut, and then she rotates, and they don't have the same issue I did at the end of my career. So, it's kind of cool how my playing career and some of the good things that I was able to instill in them for sure. I did some right things to be able to play for 12, years, but I also had some things that when I went into teaching, I thought, wow. I want by the time my kids are 16 to 17, 18 years old, I want them having a swing that I don't feel like they're going to have to tinker around with all the time. That's always been my goal with students that I get to teach from a young age is by the time they're, 18, of course they're always going to be working on things, but to where they have a swing that's has a repeatable and predictable ball flight. Then they have all the time in the world to work on wedges, short game putting, and that's kind of happened with my kids is they've had a repeatable ball flight at a pretty young age that gave them tons of time to learn the other facets of the game because the golf game is so much more than just the golf swing, right?
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that because yeah, I think Preston and Grace have similar swings, kind of you mentioned. Nothing real long, but a play from a strong position at the top. So that's funny that you mentioned your miss and how your kids, really are gonna try to not battle maybe that same miss. So that's cool because you can really see it, and they got a lot of power. You can tell. I know Preston seems like he's been growing quite a bit too, so I know he's gonna just be hammering it here.
No doubt about it. And he was more of a, the modern instruction and all the great technology we have and all the advancement in instruction. Golf is, it's always the saying, play golf from the ground up has always been around, but now we have a way to measure and quantify it. And, but my kids, I didn't go power necessarily right off the bat. I kind of taught my kids like proper technique with reasonable power, and then once the technique was there, then I let them continue to amp up the power. And Preston had a well-rounded game when he played the US Amateur when he was 15. He shot 65 60 in the US Amateur qualifying as a 15-year-old, and he went to Pebble, shot 19 under, went to Pebble Beach and Spyglass, and Victor Hovland won, and Matthew Wolf and these other great players were there. And Preston came back and he said, "Dad, I sucked this week." And I said, "Preston, you didn't suck. You're literally hitting it 40 to 70 yards shorter than the best amateurs in the world." And so all last year, it was a goal of his to pick up from go from 104 to 105 club head speed to, at least 112 to 115. Well, he had a good break in the sense that he continued to grow. He's a big kid. He gained a lot of weight naturally just from growth, but he started working out, ate a lot of good food. He sleeps a lot intentionally so he can keep on just, working on his body. And by the time he won the US Junior, he was consistently at 116 to 118 with his club head speed on the driver. And so that's what changed his game. He was already a good putter. He was already a good wedge player. He already had control. And then when he got some power in there, it really took his game to a whole nother level. So, and then with Grace, she was a swimmer growing up. And I think when she saw Preston succeed a little bit in golf, and I think she just saw me and Preston at the golf course hanging out a lot, and I think that was something that intrigued her. She wanted to come and play with us more and more. I never tried to have her have, for lack of a better word, I never taught her as a girl. I just taught her as a golfer. It was like I knew what kind of trajectory and spin she'd need to be able to stop it on the green. I never, when she was a little girl, when she was six, seven, eight, she was still mainly a swimmer, still all the way till 12 years old. She'd come out on the course, and I've posted some things on Instagram of her early years on in golf when she wasn't a golfer, and she would just wail away at it. She would just try to hit the ball as hard as she could, and I love that about her. And when you look at how she swings, she has a very strong swing. She has the average club head speed on the LPGA Tour at age 15. She swings at 94 to 95 miles an hour with her driver. And it's because with her, because of her athletic background with the swimming, she built up a great lower body, strong legs. And I have always had her playing with guys, so she learned power just out of necessity. She only played with guys that were older, bigger, stronger, and she smashes the ball. So it's kind of cool how both of them got their power in different ways and at different times, but it's something that obviously we know is a huge part of being a good player moving forward, as power has always been important, but especially now in our game.
Yeah, it's definitely trending to a power game. And just to touch on Preston's, run in the Junior M, the putts he made down the stretch, the clutch putts for par, the big benders, I mean, they were really incredible. And I'm assuming that you guys have spent a lot of time in the short game and compete on the putting and chipping greens and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with my brother for almost 5 years, and my brother's one of the best putters in the world. He statistically, in the last 10 years, is one of the top five putters. And one of the things I've always done with my kids is always put them in potentially uncomfortable situations. I've always put them in situations where people are bigger, faster, stronger, better players. So, I put Preston with and around all the tour players I ever taught, all the Korn Ferry players I ever taught. And you pick up on things, and Preston always understood from being around me and the other tour players I taught the importance of green reading. I always say you don't want to build a good stroke if you don't have a reasonably good read, because you either have to have a bad start line or a bad speed or the combo of the two. And so you could really see it come to fruition there at Inverness, because that's a championship golf course, a lot of speed on the greens, a lot of slope. And some of the putts he made, he can see the max break for sure. And that's something to his credit that he's done. He's taken a lot of the drills that my brother has done and showed him and showed me, and just been disciplined about it, and taught himself how to read a green and how to see the start line and the speed. And man, he made some huge putts coming down the stretch. Some of the matches he just played fantastic. When he played at Akshay, he kind of won with his ball strike. He didn't ball striking. He didn't really hit, make that many putts. But in the to win a major event like a USGA event, US Junior, or any big event, you're not going to hit it good every day. And the last 9 holes of that match was his worst ball striking of the week. And it was so cool to kind of see at that point in the week. He had just come off the US or the Utah State Am, where he had 2 rounds of stroke play, 6 matches, 36 hole final, a red eye to Inverness in Ohio, 2 rounds of stroke play, and then another 6 matches, a 36 hole final. He's running on adrenaline for sure. And it was so cool for me as a dad to just watch him. And as I look back on the video, I was there in person, and I could see his face, his swagger, his focus. And but I look at it on video, where they get a little bit closer on TV and all that. And after he was making some of those putts, I look back at it now, and I'm like, wow, it was cool to see how bad he wanted it. And he was really into it. And just some of those putts he made down the stretch, it just kind of is self-belief. And obviously, it's a skill set too, but you got to have the belief that you can make those putts under pressure, and he certainly did. It was cool to see.
So before we get into some of the parent coaching advice, I want to ask you one more question, because so he won the US or not the US, I'm sorry, the Utah State Am, and then he defended, and I believe, and we haven't talked about this, but it seemed like to me, because he won that second event, he won it for the second time. Did you guys get to Inverness late then, and how important is it for him coming off all these victories, almost getting used to winning? How big is that when you go to other tournaments? How big is it to just be almost comfortable battling and comfortable winning as you go from, maybe a smaller event, Utah Amateur, still, a big event, but then into the US Junior Amateur?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely was coming in on form. I think in hindsight, next summer, he asked me, he was like, man, it would be cool to try to win the Utah State Amateur 3 times, but man, it put him in a tough spot at the US Junior, because he was running on fumes. Like you said, we got done. He finished his he shot a 29 in the second nine of the opening 18-hole match of the Utah State Amateur final. He was able to close out his match on the 12th hole of the second 18. They do the award ceremony, all the media, and we barely catch our flight to Ohio to get there. And we play a 3 o'clock practice round, get done at 7:30, and he's playing the next day. And so it was all a whirlwind. And, you know, he was fatigued, but he was playing so good. And I think that's a little bit of experience, you know, where it does help. I've seen that in my own career, you know, being worn down and how important it is to be rested. All week, basically, he had really short. He's always practiced after the round. That's a critical time to practice, is your what you need to work on is fresh on your mind. What you need for the next day, you know what to do. But that week at Inverness, really, honestly, our practice sessions after the round were so short. Mm-hmm. We were going to bed so early. He was, you know, room service every night, just sleeping, laying down, and he did a phenomenal job, because a lot of those matches on those two match days. You know, matches are starting at 7 in the morning. You're getting at the course, you know, at 5:15, and you do that day after day. It just, you know, it was a cool feat that he was able to win 2 weeks back-to-back the same format. But mm-hmm. I think sometimes just coming in on good form is sometimes, you know, it's important to be rested, but he actually rested throughout the start of that week the best he could. And he was playing great, and he did have a good flow of match play. He almost lost a couple matches at the State Am. Off some careless mistakes that I know no doubt helped him mm-hmm. at the U.S. Junior, where he's like, okay, I'm up, but I got to keep the pedal to the metal. But he also won some matches from behind, to where he realized at the U.S. Junior he had three matches where he was three down, at a reasonably late point in the match, and he came back. You know, mm-hmm. he was three down after eight holes in the semifinals and won, I believe, 4-3. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, three down after 16 holes the morning session in the championship match and came back. So there's no doubt that him playing as much match play as he had definitely had a huge role in him, you know, winning the U.S. Junior. If he doesn't win the two Utah State Amateurs, he doesn't win the U.S. Junior, in my opinion, because mm-hmm. match play, there is an art to it. You know, he knew never to show negative. He's always pretty upbeat anyway. He's trained himself to be tough mentally and not show negative emotion. But it's even more critical in match play, because that opponent just feeds off of that. And so he did a great job. But when he showed a lot of match play experience, when he got down, he just kept plugging away and knowing that the matches could turn. So, yeah, his experience in general in match play mm-hmm. and his record in match play is pretty impressive. So it helped him, no doubt, in the U.S. Junior this year.
Even in splitting the episode into two parts, we went a little over in time, but I feel like it was well worth it. Be sure and stick around for part two, where Boyd goes more into his relationship with his kids and being their coach, as well as other advice for juniors, parents, and players looking to take their game to the next level. Thanks again so much for all the love and support of the podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and share it with all others who you think would enjoy it. Until next time.